You have 24 minutes. In 2021, Kelly Kerwin became artistic director at Oklahoma City Repertory Theater. She came to Oklahoma after more than 4 years at the Public Theater, where she was an associate producer. Kelly has also been on the artistic staff at Yale Repertory Theater, Steppenwolf Theater Company, Atlantic Theater Company, and others. She has a BFA from the theater school at DePaul University and an MFA in dramaturgy and dramatic criticism from the Yale School of Drama. Now, what caught our attention was an original production she pulled together called Of a Mind. With this outdoor experience, Kelly demonstrated how a theater can invigorate audiences with an authentic theatrical piece that also invites people to be part of the city's outdoor and nighttime fabric. You can find OKC Rep at OKCRep.org, OKC Rep on Facebook, and OKC Rep Theater on Instagram. My name is Randall White. I am the host and curator for 24 Hour Nation. Find us at 24hournation.com and on social media at 24 Hour Nation. Okay, so now you're in Oklahoma City and you've got the OKC's Rep's reboot season, kind of reboot from the pandemic, I presume.
Really? Yeah. From the pandemic, but also, you know, we have a new staff. We have myself who's new. I am new to Oklahoma City, new to this theater. And so it just really felt like it was a new way forward and really a reboot in every sense of the word.
And you also, I think, reshaped a little bit of the mission and
we new mission, new values, new vision, mostly new board for that part as well. So it really is.
I saw your board chair. Very impressed.
Oh yeah. He's wonderful.
So a lot of people would maybe dismiss some of the smaller markets when it comes to theater. I do not. I think there are lots of examples in the country of where non-coastal theaters have produced content that theatrical and artistic content that has gone on to become big things. And is that part of your vision for OKC Rep?
Say my part of my vision is really to produce work for Oklahoma City. So I was already producing things that I was a line producer for The Girl from the North Country that went on to Broadway. It's nominated for Tony Awards. And that's very enriching experiences. And I really love being a part of those projects, but I really felt when I was in New York, I was surrounded by an embarrassment of riches. There was amazing performances happening all of the time, not only in theater, but in music and dance, just everywhere. You throw a rock, you find something amazing. And being from Springfield, Missouri originally, I really felt like the middle of the country was being left out of the cultural conversation. And so really my vision is to make art and bring art and produce art for Oklahoma City.
And that's what you did. Would you produced and I guess ushered Of a Mind. Tell us a little bit about Of a Mind. The thing, it was an immersive experience. It took theater out of the building, which probably produced some comfort level for people still in the COVID world. Mm-hmm. It also was all original content pulled together. And I love the authentic voices that seem to come out of it. Tell us about how Of a Mind developed and why did you start with that?
Yeah, so Of a Mind developed from a kind of one day where I was really wrestling with what to produce in a season amid COVID. It was quite literally at the peak of the Delta variant when I was in my office trying to figure out what to do. And you know, when the Delta variant came, that really felt like, okay, all bets are off with this pandemic. We don't know what the light at the end of the tunnel is. It'll happen, but it seems further from where we are at this moment. And it didn't feel producerially smart to have spend a lot of resources on shows that really, really needed to have indoor in-person audiences. So the first two shows I programmed were in-person and indoors. However, if we needed to pivot those, one was a solo show, one was a storytelling piano piece that has actually been done outside before. I knew that those two could pivot if we needed to, or be rescheduled quite much more easily. But this theatrical tour came about. I walk to work every day. I'm one of the few people in Oklahoma City that commutes mostly by walking.
Nice.
And which is great. I was keeping up my New York ways. So I can hopefully continue to fit into my New York clothes, just slash jeans. They're not New York clothes. They're just jeans. But you know, I was walking through the city and just seeing all these like really beautiful public spaces that tend to not get used that frequently. It's a city where a lot of people drive. You know, my hometown is a city where a lot of people drive. That's the main form of transportation. But what was different about Oklahoma City versus my hometown is that it does have this beautiful urban metropolis in the downtown center that has a lot of different passageways, a lot of secret little alleys, a lot of back patios and pavilions. So I got this idea of trying to do a theatrical tour, which, to be honest, came from a rather silly company that I did when I was in grad school called Guided Tour, where me and three of my friends started a company purely because we didn't get accepted into the El Cabaret that year. So we were
That's
angry.
The spirit.
Then we were mad. We're like, well, you got to do something. So somehow, some way over drinks, we decided to do a fake tour of Yale.
Nice.
And so it starts off as a real Yale tour. And then next thing you know, we're on top of a parking garage and someone's being murdered and, you know, pandemonium ensues. But we had a lot of fun with it. We made a ghost tour. We made the University Studios tour, which is a play on the Universal Studios tour, right. You know, and it was great. It was a lot of fun. And so as much as I'd done this absurdist, silly kind of tour, but I knew how to direct groups of people outdoors.
Right.
And so a couple of my other friends from Yale had been experimenting with this audio site-specific binaural headphone audio tour technology.
Right.
And so when I found that out, it was quite honestly the next day after I'd been kind of percolating, trying to do a theatrical tour here. So I reached out to them and said, hey, you know, with our powers combined, let's figure something out. And then Of a Mind was born.
So you collaborated with some of your other collegiate colleagues in other cities to create a work specific to Oklahoma City?
Exactly. And
Very nice.
We worked with some locals here, but one of the benefits of having outsiders come in is that we have the benefit of outside eyes,
right.
Where we see things that we don't, you know, see every day. But we also ensured we had our movement director, because we also used some local performers, some dancers in the show. She has lived here for a very long time, and it was really useful to have that local knowledge. But then we interviewed about 25 people, I think, because it's an interview based the content, a lot of it is interview based. And so we also learned a lot about the city by going around to a variety of people and asking them questions.
And it began at a traditional kind of theater time, right?
Yeah, 7 p.m.
And so people came, they wore headsets or used their phones or whatever.
They used their phones and brought headphones, but if they needed more, we had extras.
And they showed up at a particular location. Everybody showed up at one location, and they were guided through downtown urban Oklahoma City, right? Through Kerr Park and through the alleys in between that and over to there. And so were they guided by a human being, or was it all...
It was all audio, so that was all via a voice. Actually, one of the co-creators, Hugh Farrell, he is he's from Ireland, and he has this beautiful Irish accent.
Nice.
And so this way, nobody's trying to guess, like, wait, what part of Oklahoma City are they from? Or is this a southern voice? It's already a different voice.
Did I see you in The Sound of Music? Right. Yeah.
No. Yeah, exactly. So it's a and he has a very warm presence. So he was the voice, and he guides you the whole time. And that's one of a lot of what our rehearsals would be like, okay, we just need someone who's never done this before to make sure, did they turn left in that moment? Oh, they did not turn left. We need to put those instructions in. But we also had ushers along the way that went with the group in case they had any technical issues, but also in case for whatever reason they went off the route. Thankfully they didn't, but they knew that they were in good hands that way.
And you also, I noted from your website that you made ensure to be inclusive so that if somebody was in a wheelchair, it was also be able to be navigable. And but so I show up at a particular location. Mm-hmm. I've got my phone. It mm-hmm. begins.
Yes.
What happened first? And then what happened next?
So at the beginning, everyone starts to hear there's some chattering in your ears, kind of just, you hear some just skateboarding, just kind of general city sounds that were recorded in Oklahoma City. And then you hear the voice say, is everybody here? If you can hear my voice, raise your hand. So it's this really soft introduction. It's just like, yeah, I'm here. And then after a couple minutes, everybody's invited to stand up and go onto the green space of the park. Most of the people people tend to, there's a lot of chairs and tables at Kerr Park. So at that point, people are invited to go stand in a circle. And at that point, there's this introduction of, okay, we're going to stand in a circle. We're all doing this together. Now, if you're watching from afar, you're walking down the sidewalk and you don't have headphones and you just see a group of people stand up and move and stand in a circle, you don't hear anything. But when you're with these headphones on, you know, headphones can really act as a little, as a mask almost when we're, you know, when I'm in public and I have my headphones, I kind of feel like I'm in my own world. And we've really found that that tends to happen with the group. The group starts to feel like they are in a world together, apart from the folks that are, you know, outside taking pictures, outside on the sidewalk, etc.
So as this led them through various nooks and crannies of downtown Oklahoma City, and it became dark, how did you take in consideration dark and light and that part and people's comfort?
Yeah, so we really did try to time it with the light in a particular way. So we did about halfway through the show, people are on top of a parking garage as the sun is setting. And we, yeah. And you know, you, when it was, and the thing, Oklahoma City does the sunsets very well.
They do.
And so, you know, we really tried to time it to where if the sky really, really came out for us, it would be really colorful, full of pinks and really warm. And then as it started to set and get darker, you know, we had people in a group, we had ushers with them, and everyone at this point, from my perspective, feels pretty safe. They all start to feel that they're on this thing together, that no one's going to jump out at them, that they're in the groove. And honestly, the final place that we end up is in a courtyard of a church. So I think as much as that could be a little offsetting to some people, it's a very peaceful, welcoming church. And then the very final thing is that they all get invited to go have a beer at a brewery post having your headphones on. So, you know, that's pretty. And then we left everyone with a map that showed exactly where they were probably where they could find their car.
Oh, gotcha. Nice.
Yeah. So it's like, you might've gotten disoriented. Here's where you are.
Tell me, I read somewhere, or perhaps my friends who went through the experience told me there were some native voices. So I'm curious about that. I mean, Oklahoma City, native land, it's stolen land.
Yes, absolutely. And
tell me about that part.
Yeah, well, you know, we definitely knew that Oklahoma City but Oklahoma, the state, has 39 federally recognized tribes. It would be disingenuous to try and make a show about what makes Oklahoma City special without including a perspective, at least a few perspectives from some Native American voices. So we intentionally set out for one particular story. And then, of course, along the way, different doors open and we met different people. And so we were able to include a few different perspectives from First Nations, First American people. Right. But the one in particular that we set out was, we had found in our research that there is a deep friendship between the Choctaw Nation and the Irish people. So over 100 years ago, during the potato famine, the recently post Trail of Tears, Choctaw people in Oklahoma found out about the potato famine. And though they had nothing, they had no money, they really viscerally understood what it meant to be without your food, to be impoverished. And they took a collection of money and sent it to the Irish people. And two of my collaborators were from Ireland, and they're coming to Oklahoma. And we're like, we have to figure this out. And so thankfully we were able to talk with Gina Timberman, who was one of the first director of the First Nation, the First Americans Museum that recently opened up. And she's Choctaw and knows the whole story. And it was just beautiful to just, I'd met her several times just in various events. She's a big member of the community. And it was just wonderful to get to talk to her and really even almost feel that friendship being formed in the room, because there was two people from Ireland and then there's Gina, who's Choctaw, and just, you know, it was just a wonderful experience. And so thankfully we were able to, that really cracked open our story in a way of just like, who are your neighbors? Who are your ancestors? Like this, you never know how connected you can be to
friendship. Right. It also adds also, I think, an authenticity to the piece that perhaps Oklahoma City's not seen in terms of theater incorporating the native voice. So are you the first to introduce this in Oklahoma City?
Well, I hope I'm not the first. I know
Wouldn't that be sad?
I know the Lyric Theater recently did a musical called Distant Thunder that involved a lot. But I know that inclusivity and diversity in general terms has been lacking in the Oklahoma theater scene, particularly that from Native voices. I mean, this is the stunning state. Isn't it? It's stunning. It really is. Yeah. Right.
I know the Tulsa used to have an American Indian theater company. I don't even think it has survived.
I don't know that it has. Yeah. And there are wonderful, fabulous, amazing, you know, First Nation theater artists out there. And a lot of them moved from Oklahoma because why stay?
I know. I've got to work someplace. So, and having grown up, I think, in southwestern Missouri, as you did, that's right in the heart of the, quote, Trail of Tears, the Northern Trail that came to Oklahoma. So your roots, your own roots, kind of also carry that forward. I want to talk a little bit about also your vision for OKC Rep and for perked me up when you talked about you want to write. You want to create work for Oklahoma and how important that is, because it perhaps is an overlooked part like other cities between the coasts. Tell me about the role you see in the reboot season and in following seasons in terms of invigorating theater for the Oklahoma audience, particularly. And you perform where? Where's the performance space for OKC Rep?
We are currently using the Oklahoma Contemporary Arts Center.
Okay.
Which has a beautiful theater.
It is an extraordinary space.
Yeah. So I've really, we haven't announced our season yet, but once we do, I'll let you know. I've chosen plays that I think really will speak to the community of Oklahoma City at large. There are plays, there's some play that involves basketball, and this is a huge basketball town, but also there are plays by Asian American writers, by African American writers, and those voices have not historically been seen on stage here in Oklahoma City. However, those are huge populations here in Oklahoma City. Like after the Vietnam War, this is where a lot of Vietnamese refugees ended up. I had no idea until I got here, because you wouldn't see that reflected in the production history of many of the theaters in this city. And that's something I really want to change. And there's a huge African American community. There's a huge Latinx community, of course, the Native American community. So I really believe that representation matters, and seeing yourself on stage makes you feel seen, makes you feel like your story is out there. And I've thankfully been able to see myself on stage in many, many capacities. But I understand the importance of that. I really think that that's the power of theater, but I also think it's important to see not yourself on stage. I think it's important to walk in somebody else's shoes and to hear other stories. I think that when you go to theater, it's a practice in empathy. You know, you're seeing the world behind somebody else's eyes. And so that's really kind of my larger philosophy on what I think theater can do, and what I'm hoping to do here in Oklahoma City is, you know, include some voices that I think represent people in Oklahoma City, but also might be different for some people in Oklahoma City in ways that will hopefully, you know, get conversations started, get people talking again, get people out of their houses and, you know, dreaming at night about different things and seeing the world through others' eyes.
Isn't that the magic of it all? Now, tell me a little bit about that. You just said get people out of their houses at night and get them dreaming about other things. Of course, we're intrigued at 24-Hour Nation about the nighttime experience and the role the arts and cultural organizations can have in pulling people off their lazy boys and putting them in a situation where they can experience just what you described at night. What is it about the night that makes theater so amazing to you?
Yeah. For me, I know. Yeah. So I'm not a matinee person myself. I do really prefer to see theater at night. And I think that there's something beautiful about the lights going dark in the theater, knowing that that it's already dark outside, knowing that you're not going to walk out into the stark sunlight. Nothing against people who prefer matinee, but I just think that it really makes a theatrical experience that much more impactful if you are there. The sunset, the lights go down, the lights open up on a new world, and you're part of that world. And so you're part of that world for 90 minutes to 2 hours, 2.5 hours, however long of that show is. And then I feel like when you walk into the night, you're still bringing that world with you. And then, you know, what wheels are turning in your head? What conversations are you having? Are you wanting to talk to the person next to you? Are you wanting to go out for a drink with the person you came with? I just think theater can really spark a lot of ideas. And so I think at night, it really can foster a sense of delight, intrigue, mystery, and joy.
And given what's happened to our world in the last couple of years, through the pandemic and the way it seems like it's splitting us apart and leading us into more solitary lives that aren't even about convening at work anymore. What about the role that the theater can have in bringing people together, even from a historical perspective, going all the way back? It brought people back together for a reason. Tell from your perspective, how important is that to just society?
I think it's crucial. I honestly think it's crucial. I mean, I produced theater on Zoom for a year because I had to. That's how I got my paycheck at the Public. But it's truly not the same as being in the room with people. I mean, you know, I don't want to create theater too strongly with religion, but I think that's why people go to church in person, is because they want to be in a room with like-minded people, or not necessarily like-minded people, but people where they can have a connection and experience.
I think they call it communion.
Yes, so they do call it communion.
It is a kind of communion.
Right? It is. And I think theater, it's a place where we can go laugh together. It's a place where we can go cry together. It's a place where we can all have different ideas together. You gasped together. And something Oscar Eustis, I definitely ripped this off from him. So I want to, the artistic director of the Public, has said before, when you go into a movie theater, you love it if it's empty, which is true. You're like, oh yeah, we're the only people here. But if you go into a theater and it's empty, you feel really awkward. And you're like, oh gosh, where is everybody? And then, you know, but if it's sold out, it's amazing. You feel like, yes, yes, you're all shoved together, and the energy is just more palpable. And, you know, my staff here knows that I'm all about a sold out house, not necessarily for the revenue. Of course we want the revenue, but really it's just the best experience when that house is sold out, when there's people there. It's best for the audience. It's best for the artists. It's just totally, that's what I want.
And right. Right. And the you mentioned too, the artists there, there is nothing like being on stage and having that energy come back at you from a full house. But but that energy back and forth, I don't know how often an audience realizes the work that the actor is doing in making sure that fire stays lit.
Yes. And when I say that I want to have full houses for the audience sake and the artist's sake, I really mean it. And it's that when the artists are coming here from other places, when I'm presenting, you know, a partnership with Under the Radar, for instance, I want them to feel as excited about being here as the audience is about them being there for them. So it's not just, hey, audience, look who I brought. It's, hey, artists, look at Oklahoma City. Come here, come check it out. And I have to say that for my both presentations that I have with Inua Ellums and James and Jerome, they had such positive experiences being in the rooms with people in Oklahoma City. And that really, I think, helped shape how they're talking about Oklahoma City. None of those artists had been here before, and now they've all had great experiences. And that's what I want to continue doing.
So. And I love that. And that's a good for you for being a missionary, really, of sorts.
Yeah. True.
Or at least an evangelist. I think of myself as an evangelist for the night. So thank you for that. And I have a great warm spot in my heart for Oklahoma City as well. And it's lovely to see this kind of attention and this artistic energy also come to Oklahoma City, and through your voice and through your eyes and through your training, and how you're really wanting to keep it real, you know, for the audience and future audience in Oklahoma City. That's very important. Is there any other message you would like to give, perhaps to another person in your position in any other city in the States between the coasts who's thinking, what do I do? What do I do to
integrate? Yeah, I would just say audiences anywhere, hopefully, are more open for risk than you think, and to allow yourself to take chances, because people will do, they'll go meet in a mysterious park that they've never been to and walk around a city. And I would say, try to take a risk on your audience, because audiences don't like being bored. I think being boredom is death. So it's okay to be unconventional, because we're actually all unconventional when it comes down to it.
This has been Season 1, Episode 4 of 24 Minutes from 24 Hour Nation at 24hournation.com.